From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Most of us have read or heard about the spread of the Zika virus, the serious birth defects like microcephaly that can result if a pregnant woman becomes infected, and the pressure to develop a vaccine against the Zika virus. What many of us may not have given any thought to is whether such a vaccine would be tested on pregnant women, because for the most part, pregnant women are not included in clinical drug trials for fear of the potential harm to the fetus. As a result, scientists just don't know how safe most medications are for pregnant women. That's our topic this morning. A group of bioethicists is pushing for change. They argue that neglecting to research the safety of drugs in pregnant women is unethical. With me in studio to explain is Carly Krubiner, a faculty research scholar at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute for Bioethics. Carly Krubiner, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks so much for having me.
Is it typical for most clinical drug trials to automatically exclude pregnant women?
Yes. So unfortunately, most trials just presume that we can't include pregnant women. There's a big fear and a reticence to include pregnant women out of the fear that we might introduce risk in the context of research.
But what's the root of that big fear?
I think a lot of it stems from the thalidomide controversy.
That was back in the 60s?
Yes. You know, thalidomide was used widely by pregnant women, typically for morning sickness. And then what happened was a lot of babies were born with birth defects. The irony of thalidomide, and actually the tragic irony, is that had we done the research earlier, before we had introduced this drug to the large-scale population, we would have found out about these risks, and there would have been a lot less harms as a result.
That was at a time, I think, before even testing on women was widespread. Was thalidomide tested on women, just not on pregnant women?
So at the time, women were actually not included broadly in research. Almost all of the research before the mid-90s was done on predominantly white males. So naturally, you can imagine that there were a lot of things we didn't know about how drugs work in women, in minorities, in children. And all of that really didn't change until the mid-90s when we started to think, women and children and pregnant women aren't just different versions of men.
And the reticence, the fear you talk about today, is this primarily a matter of researchers not wanting to take the risk of harming a fetus, or is the pharmaceutical industry also a factor?
So it's a really complex problem because, you know, we have a lot of things that are going on. Researchers are afraid that they're going to be the one that comes up with a new drug and introduces harm to pregnant women. There's a lot of risk of liability that comes from pursuing this, so there might be some financial risk to the companies. And we've heard actually that a lot of the pharmaceutical companies, they don't perceive pregnant women to be a very lucrative market. And we know that 97% of women take drugs during pregnancy anyway. So they don't have to do the research. They won't lose the market share. The incentives really aren't placed to do it. But we know that not doing this kind of research really can result in pervasive harms for both women and for their unborn children.
Let me make sure I understand the first point you made there. Is the liability for a pharmaceutical manufacturer actually less if they have not tested a drug in pregnant women?
So what happens is if they don't go for an indication of a drug in pregnancy, then they push the risk to the clinical space. So it's up to the woman, it's up to her doctor to, based on very little evidence, make a decision about what kind of care they'll pursue. If we have a labeling that says it's safe and something happens, then they become liable.
And so do doctors then tend to err on the side of not prescribing?
I think generally both doctors and their patients err on the side of caution. People are afraid, and there's not good evidence to guide those decisions. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of doctors who have more experience treating illness in pregnancy. They see a lot more patients who experience these conditions during pregnancy, and they are quite comfortable prescribing different things based on some of the limited research that can be done after the drug is on the market. But, you know, if you end up being somebody who goes to a hospital where there's a doctor that hasn't seen this condition very often and hasn't seen it that often in pregnant women, people tend to err on the side of caution. And women are particularly scared, too, because they care a lot about their pregnancies. So we know that there are thousands of stories of women who stop taking very important medications because they're afraid of the risk they might introduce.
Let me make sure I understand that. I mean, it seems that we've concluded that at least some medications are safe for women to take while they're pregnant. Except, how do we know that? Except through clinical trials.
Right. So it's a bit of a catch-22. So what typically happens is that there's this reticence to do the research early on. And so the drug is approved for the regular population, and then it goes out into market. But we know that women who are sick get pregnant, and women who are pregnant get sick. And then they're given the option of, well, we don't know a whole lot about this drug, but based on what we do know, we think it might be better for you to take it than to not. Or they might be told the opposite. As this happens, you can start to collect data very slowly over time, and you start to learn more from this observational data. Now, there's a lot that we can learn from observational data, and that's primarily what we use now to inform clinical care in pregnancy. But it takes us a lot longer to learn what works, what doesn't work, what the right dosing is. I mean, women's bodies are totally different physiologically. And in the meantime, as we're having this very long learning curve, we're not really adequately meeting the needs of pregnant women or their developing fetus.
Long learning curve. We're talking extra years?
For the average time it takes from a drug that is undetermined risk at the time that it's approved by the Food and Drug Administration, it's a shocking 27 years before we have any understanding of whether or not the risks are truly there.
So that's a generation.
Yes.
Give me an example of a drug.
Yeah, so something that changed relatively recently, you know, for a long time we thought that women who were diagnosed with breast cancer during their pregnancy, that you couldn't treat them while they were carrying their pregnancy. And they were really put in a very difficult situation because the old guidelines would say that either they should end their pregnancy or that they should wait, carry it until a period in the pregnancy where the baby could be delivered by C-section, but early delivery, and then you would start treatment. And we learned through this observational data for some women who decided, no, I don't want to not treat my very aggressive cancer and I still want to have my baby. Some of these people who were willing to take on that risk and with terrible anxiety, I'm sure. We learned a few years back from some researchers who decided, let's follow these women and see what their outcomes are, that in the second and third trimester, it was actually perfectly fine to treat with chemotherapy, with certain kinds of chemotherapy. And women had better outcomes, and in some cases it was better for the fetus as well than delivering them early. But we didn't know that until we did the research.
And that took years.
Years.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kass speaking with Carly Krubiner, a faculty research scholar at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute for Bioethics. We're talking about the ethics of excluding pregnant women from clinical drug trials. So some people may be listening and thinking, all right, we haven't been doing this research on an organized basis. Therefore, we really don't know much about how drugs affect a fetus. So how could we ethically conduct this kind of research?
So that's what our group is working on. We're trying to find ethical and responsible pathways that we can include women and their health needs during pregnancy in research.
Back up for me. Our group. Who is our group?
Sure. So we have a collaborative group that is a number of researchers at Johns Hopkins University, at the Berman Institute of Bioethics, at Georgetown University, at the University of Washington, as well as the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And we've been working for a number of years now looking at particularly HIV and the Zika crisis more recently to try and figure out how we can responsibly include the needs of pregnant women in the research agenda. So for Zika, for instance, there's a number of vaccines that are coming out. There's a lot of vaccines that we give in pregnancy, sometimes to protect mom in the case of H1N1 flu, because we knew that she was more likely to die if she got infected. Sometimes we give it because we know that early on the baby could be affected, both while still in the womb, but also early on before they have their immune systems developed. So there's a lot that we're very comfortable to give to pregnant women for their own health and for their babies as far as vaccines go.
And again, we're comfortable because over the years it's been observed that that works out okay?
Generally, yes. So we often have what are called registries where we follow any sort of exposures. And then over time, a judgment is made that, you know, it's actually a lot better for a woman to get exposed to a vaccine that maybe wasn't tested in pregnant women, but can prevent a really serious illness during her pregnancy. Because we know it's not good for mom to be unhealthy during her pregnancy.
And it's not good for the
baby. And it's not good for the baby.
So I interrupted you. You were saying your group is somehow developing guidelines.
Right. So we're looking at, of the range of different kinds of vaccines that are being developed now, which ones should be including pregnant women in different stages of that research so that we can safely and responsibly address their needs once interventions become available. Because we don't want this to be the same thing over and over again, where we have a great intervention that's available to the rest of the population, and then pregnant women say, "Can I take this?" And we don't have the answers.
So how do you develop that?
We've been consulting with a lot of scientists. You know, none of us are immunologists. This is a new virus for a lot of people. So we've been taking time and getting really smart about this particular virus, about vaccine technology.
Zika, you're talking about
for
Zika.
For Zika, yes. And we've tried to get, you know, the best brains on this topic to get the science straight. And we've heard a lot of things about the different kinds of vaccines that generally people who specialize in maternal immunization, who have a better understanding of this virus, what they think is reasonable in terms of what you could give to a pregnant woman. So typically, for vaccines, there's different ways that you might go about doing this. You might have a weakened version of a live replicating virus, or you might have something that doesn't replicate, that's a completely killed virus, or some proteins that will basically give you that immune response as if you had been infected, but without any of the health complications. And so we're looking at the range of vaccines and trying to weigh what are the potential risks, what are the potential benefits, and what does it mean for the kind of health policy and the emergency response that we have for Zika to do this research early on and have a better understanding. Everything from what kind of animal research we can do to know early on what the potential risks might be, to when we get into trials and we have a good sense of a candidate that might be very effective or safe in the general population, is the risk small enough that we think this is a really viable candidate that we should be offering to pregnant women as well, because the risk that's associated with this vaccine might be much lower than the risk of her getting Zika out in the real world.
Isn't it likely that women themselves would be very reticent to take part in such a clinical trial?
So a lot of people think that women wouldn't want to partake in trials. And what we learned from the H1N1 experience is that women actually were very interested, particularly if they thought they had a prospect for direct benefit, both for themselves and for their babies. They thought, of course I would participate in this trial. Here's something that might help me and might help my baby, and I can get earlier access to it through the trial. It's sort of a widespread misconception that women don't want to partake in this research.
So are we on the cusp of a change here? I mean, how is the research community reacting to this idea of having clear guidelines and expecting to include pregnant women in clinical trials?
I think that there's a lot of excitement around particularly communities that are trying to address the needs of women. So particularly among the obstetrics community and the clinicians that are treating them, among HIV specialists who are desperate to get both prevention and treatment options into the hands of women who need them desperately, and they need them often during pregnancy, where they're actually at increased risk for HIV infection. And I think that there is a lot of eagerness, but there's also a need to have better established guidance. People are still afraid, you know, but I think if there's something that is widely adopted and widely accepted by the research community and say, you know, this is ethical, in the same way we used to think that doing research with children wasn't widely accepted. Now that's standard. Of course we would do research in children because we want to meet their needs. So I think that we're starting to see the dial turn and a little bit of a sea change, but there's still a long way to go. And I think once we can get some concrete examples of how this can be done, that people would really welcome that.
I really appreciate your walking us through this. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Carly Krubiner, a faculty research scholar at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. At the On the Record page of WYPR.org, we have links to some of her work on this topic. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break now on the record. When we're back, we'll hear from the renowned political cartoonist Steve Brodner. Stay with us.